Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Two, three. Not that I'm out. Celtic lead to the league table going into the international break, but would you rather have points on the board or games in hand? You'd rather have points on the board. Around half the people that watch us on YouTube are not subscribed, and you can do that by hitting the subscribe button right now and helping us out. Did you know that all the money we make from our YouTube channel, we donate to charity? We donate to the Kano Foundation, who take kids to Celtic games for free. You can help them out by subscribing to us, and you can help them out by donating directly below, and you can help them out by paying for ad-free videos on YouTube, because we pass all that money to the Kano Foundation as well. They're a fantastic charity, and you can find out more about them with the link in the bio. Melly. Stephen, I'm going to give you a choice here. Points on the board or games in hand?
Back on top, baby. Hey, points on the board.
Top of the league again. What were you worried about?
Top of the league in St. Paddy's Day. Can you see us now? Normal service resumes.
I think you always go with points on the board. It's nicer to play the games rather than say, I'm too tired to play, or the ball's
not bouncing
enough.
Oh, the pitch is too soft. Or they didn't tell us in time.
My mum says I'm not allowed to get these new boots muddy. I probably would have taken the points, but I would have rather Rangers. Do I want them to have that game off? I was thinking about this when I was watching them against Benfica. I'm like, do I want them to go through because of the fixture congestion and the injuries they've got, or do I want them out of Europe to stop them gloating quite so much? So I wanted them, I think I want them getting as many fixtures in as small a space of time as they can. So with this game being postponed, they may have to play about three games in a week just to get the fixtures in. So I'm quite happy with that.
I treat Rangers games kind of like when I play pool. I'm incapable of seeing the bigger picture. I just want them to lose. So yeah. I don't think that far ahead. I just try and pop balls. I can't set up my next shot or anything like that. Just try and pop balls. And I basically just want Rangers to lose every single game. Yeah.
There is also a crucial component to that, that Celtic have sort of, it's not so much that bit that Celtic have struggled on this season. It's winning our own games. So that is what, that is one element.
We're on a streak again, lads. Well, we're on a streak of two.
I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up, to be perfectly honest with you, this three games in a row thing. But I've got to admit, Melly, that game at the weekend was much, much, much more like it.
Yeah, there's something about this season, a nice routine win being delightful for me. I thought Celtic played well. I thought they created a lot of chances, but a nice routine win, when that's the thing that we've struggled with all season. We've had last minute goals. We've managed to dish out the odd beating, but just these simple run of the mill games are the ones that have really challenged us this season. So to go out there and dominate, and again, it was fine, but we didn't get the goal towards half-time. But a load of chances created. It was a matter of time. And it was good to see people back. Good to see people back in the score sheet. And good to see players coming into contention now. So I think it kind of went perfectly for Celtic on Saturday. A few more goals would have been nice, but that'd be greedy.
It was very little difference between that and the Dundee game, I thought, to be honest, apart from the final goals tally. But
I thought you were going to say Ange Ball there. Well, I thought Brendan will be pleased.
In terms of the chances created, it felt very similar. And Kyogo had scored three by half time, but two of them were offside. And so somebody had missed a sitter. Iwata had a couple of chances. Eventually, Kyogo hit the bar towards the end. Iwata missed a sitter. O'Reilly was close with a free kick. There was all sorts happening. It could have been another 7 or 8-1. That's no exaggeration to say that. And really, Celtic only got into bother in managing the Carter Vickers situation, which we'll probably come on to later. Took him off and things felt a little bit dodgy for a minute, but never terminally. I never thought like St Johnson were going to creep back into the game. It was just a couple of dodgy moments, a couple of breakaways, and they got a goal out of it. That was really all.
What was the difference, Melly?
I don't know. There's not that much difference. I think Kuhn coming in makes a massive difference. I think we were maybe a bit harsh on him, but I said, look, there's no excuse for not running. Turns out losing a stone, it's kind of an early excuse, isn't it? But I think him coming in, Celtic having more of a settled team, so to speak, and it's not as if we're bringing players in and out of necessity now. It's just, like, he comes in, Carter Vickers will play. Kyogo came in because, well, Brendan Rodgers wanted him to play. We're not having to play players, just there's nobody else. So I think we're getting a bit more settled. And now the lineups are settled, the performances are a bit more settled. This wasn't a one-off, was it? We've been seeing this recently. The Hearts game stands out, but that was due to being down to 10 men for so long and some crazy decisions in there. So I think Celtic settling into the way they're playing right now is really good, and it's good to see. And I think Kuhn has made a massive difference, to be honest.
Were we a bit harsh on Kuhn? Are we allowed at this moment in time to say maybe even we were wrong about Kuhn?
Never. No. If you've come here for that,
imagine think we were going to admit we were wrong. Like, we will weasel our way out of this.
See Kuhn, I think the main problem with him was not himself. I think, as Melly, you already said, that he had dental problems that led to a little bit of illness afterwards and he lost some weight. I mean, it's all very well saying, oh, you get paid loads, just go over it and play. Right, that's very difficult. It's actually not a very nice situation to be in. But I think the Kuhn transfer just became another frustration for the season, much in the same way that people wrote Ida off before he'd even kicked a ball because of the profile of the player. We spent January moaning about transfers, and then these two guys came in and every day, like, the shit hit the fan. We were just all talking about how disastrous it was. So Ida was written off just because he was a Norwich reserve, you know, big quotes saying that. So he came in and basically proved himself straight away. He scored, and he scored those two penalties shortly after having signed. Kuhn scored that goal against Aberdeen, but apart from that, he wasn't really given the opportunity to prove himself. So he just still sat there on the shelf as one of those failings of the transfer window.
He started against Hibs and he was abysmal, absolutely abysmal.
But again, we're applying the sort of leeway there that he was struggling physically at the time. So we're led to believe for the, again, aforementioned dental problems. It's not nice. I know that footballers get paid loads, but it's all very well saying that. But
part of me is now looking at the manager going, why did you put the guy to firing line? He must have seen in training that he's maybe not up to it.
To be fair, did he not put a bad on for Kuhn in that game for Easter Road and then a bad on?
Well, that's right.
But my overall point is I think we were very, maybe not us, I can't remember what we said about Kuhn at first, but I think we were pretty harsh on him when there was one game where he wasn't tracking his runner and it led directly to goals, Kilmarnock. Yeah, so he wasn't tracking his runner and it led directly to problems for Celtic, and that's not something you can just chalk up to you're having to adjust to new surroundings, new tactics and all that. That's a basic. That's a basic requirement.
World-class basic.
You have to do that at a club like Celtic, so we were a bit unforgiving of him for that. But overall, he's been very, very good recently. He's completely turned it around. He's taking players on, which is a complaint we've had all season from our wingers, that seemed to go to pieces. We've not really had anyone doing that. Yang is a guy who can take players on, but he's a little bit erratic with his final delivery and his final ball and his end product. I tried to get away from saying
it's
that bigger
cliche, isn't it? It's a bit Aidan McGee-Dare.
Yeah, that winger cliche. I tried to get away from saying end product, but that kind of is the case with Yang. He looks like a quite exciting player, but he doesn't really deliver anything, well, to date. But Kuhn looks like he can take players on. There was the previous game where he was taking players on within the first minute and setting up. I'm really enjoying that drift slightly inside and the cross to the far post. So it's a nice, like, hung up ball and people are just coming in and attacking. It's led to at least two goals so far. So I'm quite enjoying what Kuhn's delivering just now.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's a very good, difficult ball to defend. And the thing with Celtic this season is we've been very predictable, haven't we? We know what we're going to do. So with him, and he's sort of built up this partnership with Alistair Johnston already for the goal. When Johnston goes on the outside, it just means he can skip inside. And it's not comparing them to him, but it's like Arjen Robben, isn't it? It's like, stop him doing what he's going to do. But that's easier said than done. Isn't it? Because he's done it against Livingston last week. He's done it again today, and they've both led to goals. So I think it's like, you don't need to be... I think Alex said it when he was scouting him as well, that he's not the best finisher. He doesn't look like a guy that's going to score a lot of goals, but I think he might create a lot of goals for Celtic. And Dyson's on the other side scoring them, that's fine. But the ball in, it's, you don't need to be out wide, right on the touchline and whipping balls in. It's about putting balls into dangerous areas, and he can do that. I think Palmer's decent at that as well. So I think him coming inside and sort of that Paddy Roberts-esque type player that's right-sided coming in on his left foot, it can be very dangerous for Celtic.
It does look, that's the word I was going to use. He does look dangerous. He looks like a threat.
It's what we talked about in the, I think it was the Dundee game, where everything Celtic hit went in, but that's because they were putting balls in with purpose. There was balls into areas that's difficult to defend. And if you're putting a ball in like that, the goalkeeper either has to come with it and get it, which he didn't, or the defenders have to head it away. And it's difficult to run back and head a ball away like that. You could head it over the back, or you could head it back into a dangerous area. So Celtic are making runs and purposeful runs again. Like Johnston moves somebody out the way, which allows the space to come inside for Coon, and Celtic's movement has been so much better recently. I think that's been something that we've really, really worked on.
Ryan Christie used to be quite good at that. See, when he was still a winger in the early days of Celtic, well, the early days of him having established himself after his loans, before he became more of a central kind of box-to-box presence, Ryan Christie, when he drifted out wide to the right, he was quite good at finding those balls to the back post. So, yeah, they're all very promising so far. He looks quite fast. He looks quite aggressive. He's actually closing down. He's getting involved with the press and all that. So, yeah, encouraging signs after a dodgy start.
It'd be good if he could keep it up. He looks as if he's taken a wee while to settle in. Obviously, he had some problems. He's obviously got to get to know his teammates and all that sort of stuff. But it's the, if you're going to hit form, now is the absolute perfect time to hit it. Who's he up against, though, on that side? Because it's mad that it's March, but it is what it is. But we're sort of consolidating the side now, aren't we? Mikey Johnson's moved out. He's gone. And we seem to be sitting with, well, Abada's gone as well. So we've got the three wingers, and they're in order of, they seem to be right now, Coon, Yang and James Forrest on that side. But what order do you think they fall in for, Brendan?
Hey, I'd put Coon up top. I think Yang was doing well before he got his red card, but then the breaks make, so he's out and Coon takes the opportunity. And I think Forrest would be last. He's not been in squads up until recently, until there was nobody there. And look, that's probably the way it should be. I think Coon coming in is the big money signing for us in Neil Lennon quotations. So I think that should be the order of it. And if Coon's not having a bad game, I've not really got a problem with Yang coming on. It means we've got, on the other side, we've got options. On this side, we've got options. So we're starting to look a wee bit stronger despite having the least amount of wingers we've had all season.
Because we've
shipped out the ones that are worse when they're on the park for us.
It's unfortunate for Yang, isn't it? But all those guys will play. See, Yang, Forrest, and who was I talking about? The Coon. So all of those guys will play a part, and Forrest played his part at the weekend there, a cracking goal, and come on and looked really good again, justifying the what Brendan and Rodgers had said about him previous week.
Forrest has been absolutely fine since he's came on. I think he's been absolutely fine. I think we probably could have used him more this season, to be perfectly honest. And I think James Forrest scored in 15 consecutive seasons, and he's won everything there is to win multiple times, but you get the feeling that he's never really been anyone's favourite player. Certainly nobody on this podcast's favourite player, but just these last couple of weeks, these wee cameos, I thought he's really useful for 15, 20 minutes at the end of a game, just to see the game out, just to calm things over.
Well, we spoke about that last week, about Brendan Rodgers' comments about how he's the best winger at the club and how slightly confusing it was, but I didn't necessarily disagree with it at the time. I think in terms of an overall footballer, I think James Forrest is better than anything else we've got, but what confused people, I think, was the why are you not using him then? Mm. Because, again, prior to last week, he wasn't even in a squad. Yeah. He hadn't kicked a ball since the 23rd of December. So he appears out of nowhere, and Brendan Rodgers saying, by the way, this is the best player I've got. And everyone's like, come on, could we not have been using him then? But as far as this relates to Yang, it is unfortunate that as soon as he starts to look like he's putting it together, he gets that suspension, and then Coon comes in and he's sort of usurped him already. But again, there'll be plenty of football to be played for either of these guys or both. You can use them both in the same game. You can play one for an hour, bring the other on for half an hour, and vice versa.
Exactly, because I'm thinking if you put yourself in any fullback shoes and Coon, you come up against Coon for 60 minutes and then off comes the bench, and you're thinking, oh God, no, I cannot face this.
Yeah. Coon's still building himself up as well, isn't he? That was another 60 odd minutes he got at the weekend, same the week before. But the problem Celtic had at the start of the season was players were just having to play, or we were bringing on Bernabeu when we're getting beat 2-0 against Hearts and left wing. But now that we've got options, it's good to use them. And Celtic are getting these games won rather than having to throw these guys on as a Hail Mary. So Coons look good. On the other side, I think Maeda, and I think Coon, Kyogo and Maeda, the three of them up front, it wasn't just the attacking side yet. The pressing was pretty relentless from them. Yeah. And it was great to see, because it forced St Johnston into making multiple errors. It's just booting the ball away. And look, probably their tactics under Craig Levein anyway, but Celtic just forced them into errors. And even like towards the end of the game, Dyson Maeda closed one down and Brendan Rodgers was giving him it from the touchline, praising him. So I think Celtic's energy has looked a lot better in this, and that's down to those three guys pressing and putting teams under pressure.
I had to laugh when Craig Levein said after the game that they'd limited Celtic in terms of chances. Mm. And I thought, limited to what? Was that about 20 odd or something like that?
I think there was always Celtic are a good side, I suppose that I have to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
So, what? What's wrong with you, man?
Thanks very much, Craig. But yeah, limited Celtic in terms of their chances. But as I've already said, there was the three goals and then there was multiple offside goals that were marginal offside goals, but they're not planning for that, for Kyogo to be just about a chest offside when a cross comes over. There was the one that was cleared off the line by someone's hand. There was all sorts going on. To say that Celtic were limited in terms of their chances is stretching credibility ever so slightly, Craig.
I thought Kyogo was absolutely brilliant again.
Yeah, he's back to his best as well, isn't he? The thing is that there's been a lot made of Kyogo this season, and there's no getting away from the fact that I think that was his 15th of the season. And you compare that to last year, was it 33 or something like that, 20-odd the previous season. So it's not been as productive a season, but there was always going to be a period of adjustment to a new manager. Whether it should take this long, who knows?
Exactly
the same tactics. But see, in fairness to Kyogo, it is unusual for him compared to previous seasons, as I've already said there. But since sort of Christmas time, he is kind of a 1-2 record. He is getting goals here. Mm-hmm. It just hasn't seemed quite himself throughout that.
I think you put your finger on it. Even watching him in the games, watching his performances, he felt a bit low key for the past couple of weeks.
He looked a bit frustrated, didn't he? Like at times he was trying to do everything himself, taking extra touches, especially in the Hearts game, sort of snatching at things. But we've seen in the game at the weekend, he's that instinct guy, and it just seemed like at the weekend he'd more. I don't know if he did, but he had more touches. He was more involved. And I don't mean involved as in dropping in, but Celtic were creating chances for him. The one he had the brilliant first touch for, the second touch wasn't great, and then he managed to scoop it over. In other games, like, that's been his only chance, and that's been it. But in this game, he's got three goals, two of them offside. He had that chance. He had one that scalped the bar as well. So I think in this game, Celtic created a lot more chances for him, and it didn't feel as if when he got the ball, he was having to do something then, so he felt as if he was involved in the game. And it looked so much better from Celtic, because even they didn't miss any glaring opportunities. They were cleared off the line from Iwata. The one Iwata missed at the end was glaring. Matt O'Reilly had the free kick, and then Kyogo's ones. It's all chances that were unlucky or just stopped by decent defending. It wasn't as if Celtic were passing up chances. Yeah.
Goes without saying, of course, but he's a completely different player when he is the focal point, when he is the lone striker. So I understand the need to try things, because, as we said, we're on another streak now, but the consistency has been a big problem for Celtic this season. Putting strings of results together has been a big problem. So I understand the need to try different things. And if it's pairing Ida and Kyogo together, playing Ida up top with Kyogo down just behind them. But while Ida has been a brilliant player so far, he's been very effective, he's got goals in the limited game time he's had. Very unlucky with that Rabona, that would have been absolutely brilliant just at the back post there. But when Kyogo is the focal point, when he is the lone striker, his movement's just completely different when he's withdrawn. I mean, that kind of goes without saying, but a game like that really makes you appreciate the movement that he has there. When he's always just hanging about offside and the defenders aren't really sure what to do with him. Yeah, granted that a couple of his goals against St Johnstone were correctly flagged for offside, but you never know with those fine margins, and it's always given the defence something to think about when he's just hanging about like 5 yards behind them.
I thought we found a lot of space in behind St Johnstone multiple times, even though you know, visually it looked like we were getting a lot of space, even though they were playing 10 at the back. It was bog standard Craig Levein stuff, hoofing it, 10 at the back, time wasting, all that sort of stuff you come to expect from a manager of his calibre.
Never won at Celtic Park in his career. That's pathetic, isn't it, man? Wow. Absolutely
pathetic. The amount of jobbers that have taken points off us over the years. Wow.
But I think you're right. I think we've seen the frustration in Kyogo recently that when he's making these runs and he sort of puts his hands up, but there was one in the first half where Iwata didn't play it to him and Iwata copped it off him. And I think what Celtic are doing just now is good. They're creating chances for him, but I still think they're missing that one thing in that midfielder that can pass the ball. Then I remember, oh, we do have Itati. He's just not there, because I think we're Bernardo in there, he gives you a lot of industry off the ball, but on the ball he doesn't give you much. And I just think if Celtic had that Hatate or a number 10 who wasn't David Turnbull and who was good in there, we'd find Kyogo more. I think now he's making the runs, we're just spotting it more. But it's not just, I think the big difference for me is it's not just Kyogo making runs, there's other players making runs, which in turn create space for everybody else. Like when you see Kuhn get the ball, he's not just left to take on two guys. AJ's going on the outside and Matt O'Reilly's inside, so he's got options. Whereas previously, like earlier in the season, it was felt as if it was get it out wide, he'll take guys on and cross it in and that'll be it, and it wasn't working.
You were speaking about Iwata there, and then Bernardo as well. The midfield's a bit of a... Celtic seem to be sort of building their team now in March. So we kind of figured out what the best front four looks like, and then we move back in the midfield. There's still questions over the midfield. You've got Iwata, you've got Bernardo, you've got Matt O'Reilly in there, you've got Kelly, who's been getting minutes recently. I thought Iwata was good enough for Celtic. I just think, as the game went on, and even Pearce throughout the whole game, actually, I'm being a wee bit too fair to him there, but I thought he was quite cautious at times. I thought he was maybe a bit too cautious. He was playing passes that Welsh was playing, and I thought, no, you need, if Welsh can play that pass, we don't need you to play it 4 yards to Greg Taylor, who's standing right there, for talk's sake. We need you to be the guy to progress the ball. But some of his passing was great. He was getting it forward at times, but I just thought, if there was a wee dial that I could just turn up the bravery a wee bit, turn up the attacking intent on...
Do I go full Iwata here?
I wanted to go full Iwata. I just wanted to just turn up the Iwata pressure a wee bit.
If you turn that up in him, you take the player out of him and all that.
What do you think?
I think I remember you saying that on Saturday, so watching the game back, I was having a look for it. And look, he does play it safe, but I kind of feel that's what you're getting with Iwata. He is that guy that... sort of water carrier in there. He's not going to be the guy that beats a man, but he did set up a goal last week and he played a good ball over for Kuhn at the start.
Yeah,
he just
right.
Yeah, get to take it down. But I'm happy enough with him, but I think, could he be a bit braver? Aye, but then do you drop him when Cal McGregor's back and put Cal McGregor there? Then I'm looking at it, Celtic have had a solid foundation to build off when he's in there, because he is an out-and-out number six rather than Cal McGregor, who seemed to fall back into that. I think he gives Celtic a platform to build off. He keeps it simple. He keeps it ticking over. And sometimes, you know what, you're better just holding on to the ball sometimes and keeping it going for Celtic. I think having that possession, it was 72% possession.
Yeah, yeah.
That must be one of the highest allowed Celtic that platform to build off. And
Limited to very few chances in the game.
Just the three goals in the
23 shots, 10 shots on target, 74% possession, 741 passes.
I think we had the most touches in the opposition box of any team in this season as well. No bother, Craig. So I think Iwata gives Celtic that platform to build off. And when you mentioned there that Bernardo and alongside him Matt O'Reilly, I thought O'Reilly was decent again, but Kelly coming on, and then if you've got our Hatate and McGregor coming back, Celtic are starting to get options when we just it hasn't felt like we've had that all season. And even with every player available going into these big games, Livingston and Rangers, I'd probably still have Hatate and Iwata in there because he gives us that foundation and he makes us a wee bit more solid.
I suppose, I don't think if there's question marks over any of the midfielders, Stephen, it's probably Bernardo. Iwata's fine, and I take on board what Melly says, and I don't want to change entirely who or what Iwata is, but I just think those passes like the one you're talking about to Kuhn, there was times when I felt like that was on for him. I felt like it was a bit more of that was available.
Before we move on from Iwata, what I would say about him is that I agree with kind of all points being made here. I think he's very good, very effective. He exerts a kind of control over the midfield, which I think is very useful. But he is a little bit conservative with his passing at times. But that's, for me anyway, that's a very minor complaint about the level of performance that he's been having recently. But what I would say, I think, is very important that he provides is the interceptions. Yeah. Is he just nipping in and just like, stealing it off someone's toes? Even though St Johnstone are clearly not going to bother Celtic a lot, Celtic have been vulnerable to that kind of thing all season. See those breakaways or balls in behind or balls in between Scales and Taylor. I know Scales wasn't playing in this game, but that type of thing. See if you've got a guy like Iwata in there and Carter Vickers as well, who was excellent at this. But over the halfway line in St Johnstone's half, even if they look to be breaking away, someone just steals in, just snuffs it out straight away. And it means that Celtic can effectively live in the St. Yep. Johnstone half. Yep. They can have all their players in their half. They can't get out because the Iwata's just coming in, stealing the ball. Carter Vickers is coming in, snuffing out attacks. He's not a centre half. He's basically another midfielder in those scenarios for Carter Vickers. So I thought he was very effective at that.
I just felt, Brendan, why are you doing my boy dirty, putting him back into centre half? No, that's no yeah. fair. He's getting a good run
didn't
at it.
Didn't he stay there very long? Did no, he?
He's getting a good run at it. You know, you do him like that. But I think the wee triangle that Welsh, Carter Vickers and Iwata, I think it worked well at the weekend because it was just pop off, move it across, and I think they worked around St Johnstone very well.
When we're looking at the midfield, we're looking at Bernardo, Bernardo was bumbling along the bottom and there was a little spurt of enthusiasm yes. for Bernardo, and then now we're sort of back to where we were.
He's, pay the money, I think we said.
I think we said, but to be fair...
After we said Terminado.
Yeah, I think we did say pay the money, but that was at a time where we had absolutely no faith
yeah.
that we would sign anyone better. And to be honest, I still don't think we've got any faith we'll sign anyone better, but we've got a new head of recruitment coming in, so that might change. But
oh yeah, I'm sure.
We've got Kelly there though, a young player. We're trying to get him to sign a new contract. I'm sure Celtic are being really, really generous with this contract offer, and they're not doing the usual. But I think it's important, isn't it, Melly, to try and get Kelly minutes, and he's been getting them obviously. But I think it's going to be a struggle for Celtic to keep our young players. It already is a struggle to keep our young players. So when you've got a guy that you want to keep, you want to tie down a contract, minutes are absolutely crucial. And it's about providing that old cliche, that pathway for these guys and using them in important games at important times of the season, have the manager trust them. It all sort of builds around a confidence around the young player in his own mind that one, he's going to play football at Celtic, two, he's got a future here, and three, it's probably worth signing that contract.
Yeah, and he is very young for a player breaking through at Celtic. Sometimes at Celtic they are a bit older, coming into the 19, maybe 20 before they start playing, but he's a bit younger than that. And it's a difficult one because even though Bernardo's not that much older, he's more experienced than him, and he's done it against Rangers this season. He's had good games, so maybe you could...
Had Champions League experience yeah. coming to the club as well.
Maybe you could just say, do you know what, Kelly deserves a shot, but these are high-pressured games where Celtic have to win, and if you're putting in a young guy at that age and Celtic don't win, he's probably going to be one of the fall guys. But I think Rodgers has used him well. I think going forward, ideally, if it was another season and Celtic were ahead, he'd get a lot more game time. But at the same time, again with Celtic, if you are good enough, you will get game time. There will be game time for you, and Kelly's getting that. He's not just
he always a central midfielder?
I think so. He's not just getting put in there because there's nobody else, because there's signings Celtic have yeah. made this season yeah. that are
he's
there.
He's taking Holmes' place, but yeah.
He's ahead of home. Kwon's been loaned out. There's James McCarthy still there. Mm. So there's plenty of players that could be getting game time, but Kelly's ahead of them. And so
not a mention of James McCarthy on St. Patrick's Day.
Was he up
not
on the
one
video?
Mention. I don't know, but they had Scales and Ida doing a wee kind of guess the Celt thing, and it was all badges from Irish players of the past. Not one mention of James McCarthy.
So they had a video before the game at Celtic Park, and it was like, now turn your attention to the screen. Will we pay tribute to some of the fantastic That's Irish right. players that have worn the hoops? And I thought to myself, like, I can't remember every single Celtic player ever played for Celtic, specifically ones from Ireland, but it was, I counted like Robbie Keane, Pat Bonner,
Tommy Coyne, I think was up
Aidan
there, yeah.
McGeady, Tommy Coyne, there was like six. I thought, surely it must be more than that.
Cascarino.
Is this the ones you can just find the videos for? But there was no James McCarthy, I don't think.
Stokesy not get a mention either?
No, Stokesy.
Oh dear. But I think Kelly deserves the games. Ideally, you'd like to give him a run of games, but Celtic have got games to win, and I think game time will be coming to him, especially with the nine subs, and he's well ahead of home in it. And every time he comes on, you always think he always does something. You know what? There's a player in there. It would be nice to see more of him, but I think next season we'll see more of him. But right now, see if he comes on. I have no worries about it. I don't think we've really came down, especially back in the days when we were bringing on Mikey Johnson. You think the talent has went down here. I don't get that with Kelly.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is fine for now with Kelly. I think it's been managed pretty well. I agree with what you've just said there. I think there's no reason to not have him more involved or as involved as he currently is, just in basically most games. I'm not saying start every game. I know Chris Sutton and Brendan Rodgers had a wee indirect disagreement over the media.
Shots fired.
Yeah, a little bit of shots fired. I didn't even know what Brendan Rodgers was referring to when he made a slightly pointed comment in a press thing about how he was criticised for playing Kelly at Tynecastle. I thought to myself, I'm not aware of this at all. Turned out to be a Chris Sutton column where he said that it wasn't an environment for an 18-year-old to be thrown into. Don't know if I'd necessarily agree with that. I think, if he's good enough...
He's a freebie at that point as
Yeah. So I'm perfectly happy with the way he's been managed just now, because too often we get glimpses of these young players and that's all it ever is. So you get a player like Frame's another one. So if everyone thought, right, this is the guy, now no point in playing Burnaby ever again, we've got Mitchell Frame, he's just going to basically compete with Greg Taylor and that'll be it, we're all going to get rich and never grow old, it's all going to be fine, right? So then he kind of gets but that's probably quite a bad example because I think he got an injury. But you know what I mean? We've had these young players around the team who kind of come in and they disappear again.
There's been loads of them throughout the seasons. Brendan Rodgers has introduced a few that have completely disappeared. I'm immediately thinking of Calvin Miller. Not under Brendan Rodgers, but we had them off.
Karamoko as well.
Yeah. Karamoko. There's been a few of these guys. And you always have such high hopes of them, don't you? Yeah. Because you think, like, that's kind of, you need to have that sort of Glasgow Scottish connection to the club, because you don't want Celtic just to become full of foreigners. Well, somebody will clip that.
But are we getting Brexit done or what?
I know. What you want is, you want some homegrown combat aged males in the Celtic squad.
Yes, absolutely do. I wasn't expecting that. So Kelly, I'm encouraged by it because using him consistently suggests that that's not going to happen to him. But I'm careful about these because I don't like to get too excited about these players for all the reasons you've basically just illustrated there. Quite often they come in and disappear, but the consistency with which he's being used at the moment, albeit sparingly, is absolutely fine by me. So hopefully he can get a new contract signed though, because the last thing we need is yet another kicking in the nuts for this sort of pathway thing we're constantly hearing about.
All joking aside, that's kind of what I was trying to get at. I think it is important that we bring through homegrown players, players that have come through the Celtic system, because you want that on the side. It might be a slightly sort of romantic idea now that because the way it's going with Celtic, you just it seems such an impossible task now. It seems almost impossible to keep a hold of our, not even the cream of the crop, but even the guys who are sort of like that second tier down of youth player are still moving on. And you think, but given guys like, take Kelly, for example, I know it's not really panned out that way for Rocco Vatra. He was getting minutes, contract offer. That's kind of all gone quiet. He's no longer really getting minutes. You don't want to see this with Kelly. Think, right, okay, starting in minutes. All the noises are fairly positive. Brendan's been very glowing about the player. Brendan said midweek that, you know, the young talent has always been at Celtic. We just need to provide that pathway. It's up to my job to get them through into the first team.
Yeah, and they have to be good enough. And I think Kelly's proved that, hasn't he? You would put him miles ahead of home than I am. Just not seeing it at all with home. But with Kelly, I think he has got that wee bit of dig along with the technique as well. And he tries to impose himself in games. He doesn't just let the games pass him by. So really impressed with him. But I think with the whole midfield, no matter if it's the three that started or Kelly coming on, it's very industrious with Celtic. And with the wide players we've got now in Kyogo, there's a good blend in there, especially with the games coming up. I think the Livingston game, usually with McGregor and Hatate coming back, you'd say, do you know what, just put them back in. I'm no sure on that pitch. I think the midfield, the blend it is just now, Bernardo is a weird player and I think he's better when he doesn't have the ball. He makes good runs. He's very industrious. Like I said, he's all action. But when he's got the ball, he's not got the technique, I don't feel. So I don't know if that's something that'll come with him. But that midfield is hard to play through because they work so hard and they're good positionally. So I think that could be an advantage coming into the Livingston game and then the Rangers game. It means also we don't need to rush back players. Famous last words if Martindale does is in the next game. But I think with the options we have right now, it doesn't mean we're throwing McGregor and Hatate right back in there.
Would you be playing Carter Vickers on that plastic pitch?
So Carter Vickers, that's a very good question because it has to be managed now. And I understood why it had to be taken off against St Johnstone. But that coincided, or rather directly led to Celtic kind of falling apart a little bit without Cameron Carter-Vickers on the pitch. So I appreciate that it has to be managed because what we do not want is another sustained period of absence for Cameron Carter-Vickers. I don't think we can survive it, to be honest. I've never been more convinced of it than that performance against St Johnstone. I already said earlier that I was so impressed with his ability to just snuff out attacks because when you say that a defender has had a brilliant game, that conjures up images of being really backs against the wall and defending your own box with blood and guts and all that. But nothing could have been further from the truth. He's playing in St Johnstone's half, just shutting down attacks. Every time they look to break, just muscle someone out, give it off to one of the midfielders, reset again. He's so important to that. Because how many times when he's not in the team do we see Celtic chasing back towards their own goal, sprinting towards their own goal, a ball's come over the top, we're all panicking, we're running towards the goal. It just doesn't happen with Cameron Carter-Vickers. It was as easy as even the Motherwell game. As soon as he came onto the pitch, it just stopped. The Theo Bear thing, basically just off like a light, and just that Theo Bear thing was no longer a threat, just playing the ball in behind Navrotsky and all that. So we're a completely different team with Cameron Carter-Vickers in it, to the point where yes, it's a plastic pitch and I would worry about him, but the risk is too great, I think.
Nah, I'm not playing him. I'm not playing him in that plastic pitch. I don't care. Have him on the bench, bring him off. I don't care. Or play him and get two goals up and take him off. I think these plastic pitches, especially players like Cam, who needs his injury management, I just think it's too much of a risk to play him. I think if you play him and you get through the Livingston game, you've made it through the Livingston game, but you're writing off potentially the rest of the season if he picks up. It's not even an injury. Sometimes the players just, having had played 90 minutes on that high impact surface, they're out for a couple of games. I just don't think it's worth it. I think, what's Kobayashi up to? Sacrifice him instead.
Imagine getting that call. Has he played all season? Cool. Okay, yeah, we've got just the job for you.
I'm no risking it, man.
Remember Ange done it at Bolingoli, didn't play until it was a plastic pitch and he started to it's a very difficult one because it seems like the type of injuries he's had would be ones that could flare up again in a plastic pitch. And that's why I mentioned about McGregor and Hatate. McGregor's been an Achilles, Hatate's been the calves. Injuries you don't want to be playing on that pitch. So do I see Celtic going to Livingston and winning comfortably without those three players? I don't care how bad Livingston are. I think if you can leave one of McGregor or Carter Vickers out, you'd maybe get away with it. But to leave both out, the, going up there, because we know what Livingston are going to do. It's just going to be ball shelled into the box. And if you want me to go to that game and watch Stephen Welsh and Liam Scales deal with it, I'm not going to be confident in it. And maybe that's why I like Iwata playing there. So I don't know if Carter Vickers is going to their Australia, the USA squad as well. So we might need to just keep an eye on that. But I think if he's fit to play, we start him and then get him off as soon as we get any sort of lead.
It changes the opposition's plan. If Cameron Carter-Vickers doesn't play, if they find out he's not in the team sheet, they all of a sudden grow in confidence. Derek McInnes even admitted that, I think, more than once this season. Mm. Saw Cameron Carter-Vickers wasn't in the team and thought, here we go, we've got a chance here. So like even as a prop, even just putting him in there, by the way, Cameron Carter-Vickers is playing, would completely change.
We could
change.
Do the reverse of what Steven Gerrard did every single time we played him. Remember, every single time in the lead up to playing Rangers, Steven Gerrard would go, oh, it's looking touchy for whatever, Connor Goldson, I think he might be out this week, and then lo and behold, he's on the team sheet. Yeah. We could do that, but we're like, Cameron Vickers is definitely playing, 100% playing. He's definitely going to be there. He gets off the bus, the whole shebang, but he just doesn't take to the pitch. Yeah. The mind games go on. Listen, when is the best time to talk about referees?
After you've won.
Yeah, there we go. So we might as well do it. The referee, it wasn't like dramatically and drastically abysmal, but he just kept getting in the way of things, which I thought was really peculiar. But the one thing that brought to my attention was the not handball, which stopped the, whose goal was it? Kyogo's shot? Was it
someone close in? Kun,
was it Kun? So it was the not handball. So it hits the guy here, he turns his body, hits some, just sort of below the shoulder, and it stops the goal from going in, and it's not a handball, right? Are you happy with that?
Yeah.
On the face of it, you happy with that, Melly?
I don't think there's anything else he can do, but his arm has stopped the ball going
right
in the net.
And that's where we are with this handball thing, right? And but I immediately sent my mind back to a couple of weeks ago at Tynecastle, and I just think we've got this handball rule.
Yeah.
Completely arse over elbow. So the ball bounces off a Celtic player, ricochets off another Celtic player who's fallen and can't see it, hits him in the arm. That's a penalty, but it hits this guy's upper arm as he's stopping the ball going the back of the net from the line, and it's not a penalty. It's not even VAR'd. It's not even looked at. And I think
it would be looked at, wouldn't it? They look at everything. But
with our beady little eyes.
Yeah, I think for the purposes of this, when I say not being looked at, I think what people mean is, when they say that, I mean the referee didn't go to the monitor. We know VAR watches everything, but the referee wasn't even called at that point to say, you want to take a look at this, you want to go to the monitor, might be a potential handball. So I think that has led to a lot of confusion over VAR, and I think the confusion over VAR has led to a lot of complaints, and I think a lot of complaints is what's led to Crawford Allen stepping down at the end of the season. And I think it's fair enough. Like, not even from the conspiracy point of view, not even from... Even if I didn't support any team, I just did a general Scottish football podcast here, it's been a mess.
Aye. Yeah, this incident itself, I want to be clear up front, I don't want a penalty for that because I think it's ludicrous. As you say, Mel, what's he supposed to do? You couldn't even get your arm behind your back in time to do anything about that. So
he do the Mel Gibson.
Dislocate his shoulder immediately. So I don't want a penalty for that, but seeing that happen just leads me back to Tynecastle and thinking, well, what is it we're actually trying to get at here? What are the rules of the handball? Because I know that it's supposed to be that if a hand stops the ball from becoming, well, going over the line and becoming a goal, then that is supposed to be a penalty.
Right.
But then distance from the ball comes into play. But there's no any, like, what distance?
Silhouette, Stephen.
Yeah, silhouette. So the distance the ball travels between the foot and the hand is taken into account in these scenarios.
But what distance was Iwata from the ball then?
Exactly. So what is the distance? You can't just say distance, because that could mean literally anything. So again, we're in a completely nebulous grey area of this where nobody knows what on earth the handball rules actually are.
So as I said, Crawford Allen steps down. Ian Maxwell, the chief executive of the SFA, said it was he's left to pursue new opportunities. Ian Maxwell admits the VAR processes need to improve, but I think we can all agree in that. He urged all parties, including external stakeholders, so I presume that's us as well, work together to alleviate unsustainable pressure on match officials and VARs. So this is, I think, is the key to it. He says he wants to remove the convenient blame culture attached to subjective or unpopular decisions. And to ensure more focus is placed on the entertainers rather than the on-field facilitators. He told the SFA website, this includes all key external stakeholders having a better understanding of the laws of the game, the lines of intervention for VAR and the adopted guidance within Scottish football, especially subjective areas of the handball law. So,
yeah, there's funny noise in my earpiece just now. It sounds like bacon sizzling. It sounds like blood getting to a very high temperature indeed. I'm not sure if that's coming through in the mics.
So what he's saying there is, it's your fault for not understanding the rules. And what I would say to anyone listening for the SFA is, no, it's your fault for not explaining this clearly enough. And if there's, I don't think the SFA have got some grand conspiracy to, you know, interfere in anybody's football games, right? But I do think that the opportunity to subjectively apply the handball rule is a license to give penalties. And I think that is just leaves you wide open for all sorts of criticism, and it leaves you wide open, whether you want to admit it or not, for bias and cheating. And I know it's a big bad word, you're not allowed to say it, but at the end of the day, no one knows if a referee cheats or not. You can't just assume that a referee's never cheated in his life or whatever. It's ridiculous. Football players do it. Referees, I'm sure, do it as well. So I think it's right, Melly, that the way that VAR's been, we all said a couple of months ago you'd bin it. It's not enhanced the game at all. And the stoppages are all this usual. The stoppages are too long. The offside graphics are weird. The whole offside rule is weird. How you just play. Sometimes you play till you complete and you score a goal. Sometimes the flag goes up and they stop. There's just too many variables around VAR. And I think they need to use this summer as a reset, as an education point for people that are watching the game and involved in the game. And they also need to use it for themselves a wee bit.
New head of recruitment, new head of referees in the summer.
Same times.
Can't wait till Andrew Dallas gets the job. Yeah, I think...
You're joking, but...
I'm kind of joking.
But honestly...
Yeah, I think... Something had to give here again, and I make the comparison with the head of recruitment, because it can't just bumble along like this, that this is going wrong all the time, but no, yous aren't seeing what's going wrong. Like, even from the very first game of Michael Smith, the Hearts player, and Celtic don't get that one, and then from then on, because if you're talking about handballs and that, you can go, maybe it's not been that bad, but then I can go, well, what about the one against Hearts? What about Burnaby? What about Goldson? What about Matt O'Reilly? What about Iwata? And that's just five I could name. I could go on, keep going on with these ridiculous handball decisions or non-decisions that one's a penalty and one's not. It's not our job to speculate what isn't a penalty. It's your job to be able to explain this. Look, if this happens, this will be a penalty, and if this happens, it won't be a penalty. Because then I could just come back to you with examples of, well, what about this one? That one's pretty much the same. That's a penalty and that's not. So something had to give there. I didn't expect a resignation of sorts, but do I think it will change anything? No, it just seems to think as if, do you know what? It's not the referee's fault, it's your fault. So I'm not taking the derry for it anymore. Find somebody else.
I think VAR just needs an adjustment, to be honest. I don't think it needs binned altogether. I think it needs a bit of a...
All over football, not just Scotland.
Yeah, I think so. Scotland in particular, right enough, because everyone, I mean, England have the odd calamity down there, but it's not like, it doesn't seem to be a weekly basis like we seem to have. But I think we need to re-establish what it is VAR is there for. And I know we're end up talking about VAR again. Like, a lot of people will be incredibly bored of hearing about it. Us too. But it, unfortunately, as a weekly occurrence in this country of ours, which is great. But VAR, I think we need to re-establish what it's actually there for. And something Brendan Rodgers had said, and a few people have said recently, so it's not just a Celtic thing, about how it's re-refereeing the game. Yeah. So the referee is seeing things and then being told he's wrong about it, even though he's got a perfectly good angle of it. So I think we need to do away with stuff like that. The clear and obvious thing just, again, seems too vague.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be the mirror opposite of that. It's supposed to be clear and obvious, but nothing could be further from the truth. It's re-examining incidents, stills, freeze frames and all that, slow motion, to re-referee incidents that happened fairly easily in the actual moment itself.
It shouldn't be, VAR sort of provided this mirror world, hasn't it? You're not watching the game and going, can't believe the referee missed that and the VAR didn't pick it up, like a foul off the ball or whatever. What you're watching is the VAR highlighting things to the referee and still coming to the wrong conclusion. Like, I can't believe they VAR'd that. And, you know, it was for example, blatant dives are getting awarded as penalties, or the handball thing's a complete mystery. It's, it's, as you said, they just need a wee reset. All the technology is there. It's already in the stadium. They just need to sort of change their approach that a wee bit.
Even at the game of the weekend there, the one of the Kyogo goals that was offside. In fact, the goal that counted, they looked at that in VAR for ages. Yeah. Felt like about 2 minutes when on the replays in the on the big screen in the stadium, it was completely clear that it was never offside in a million years. So what we're looking at then is we're trying to find like someone's wrist has maybe gone, I know you can't score with the wrist, but that's how ridiculous it's kind of gotten. But tiny little things are going offside and it takes minutes at a time. This is not what this is for. We need to redefine these rules somehow and get it actually working for the game rather than against it.
So that's it. We look forward to a summer of change for VAR. I mean, no, I don't really see much changing, but it'll be interesting to see where we go with it. Hey, look, to finish up, I thought I would let you know the bad news that Ronnie Dyla has been sacked from Club Bruges. He has sort of ran aground there a wee bit as they sit fourth. And I just thought how different things could have been. Obviously, Ronnie Dyla came in.
Speaking of handballs.
Better segue than I was coming up with anyway, Melly. We were discussing just before how Ronnie Dyla, we were saying, but was he the last manager that we had that kind of wasn't connected to Celtic in any sort of way? You know, he wasn't like
An Irish guy
or he hadn't been Neil Lennon's Irish as well, obviously. And then we thought, well, no, because the first plan for Ronnie Dyla, Stephen, was to come in as Roy Keane's assistant.
I know. What a parallel universe that could have been where Roy Keane, and this is only in the last decade we're talking about, where Celtic Football Club wanted to appoint Roy Keane as their manager with Ronnie Dyla as the assistant. You think about that now. I mean, it didn't seem like all that wild a proposition back then, but now in the fullness of time, we've had Brendan Rodgers twice and Ange Postecoglou and even Neil Lennon, who's been a successful manager as well. The idea that we would have had Roy Keane as a manager back then is ridiculous.
But the dynamic between him and Ronnie Dyla, I just don't see any sort of dynamic there at all.
I know. We've had some funny partnerships over the years. Even Dyla and Collins is a wee bit odd as well, but just to think about Roy Keane, how long that would have lasted. Who knows what kind of spiral that would have sent us into with Roy Keane and Ronnie Dyla. But Ronnie Dyla got the main gig through chance, really, because Roy Keane, I don't know, didn't fancy it or whatever. Cushier gig, maybe.
Do you not think in a strange way it might have worked? Because I think Ronnie Dyla just didn't have the personality at that time, but maybe he had... Did he have the tactics? I'm not sure. Sometimes it was good, sometimes it was dreadful. So maybe having that person, that strong personality beside him, like Roy Keane. But if players fell out with John Collins, then the chances of them falling out were Roy Keane up pretty high.
I mean, that's why I wanted to sort of talk about it and look back a wee bit, because at the time, Celtic were sort of given credit for going out and getting one of these sort of promising European coaches. And you sort of think, well, did he just fall in their lap a wee bit? Was that really the idea? But at the time, it was quite a... It felt like the right way to go for Celtic, but with Rangers out of the league, we just didn't really... In retrospect, at the time, it felt almost like the right way to go. But now in retrospect, perhaps even more in retrospect for me, the Ronnie Dyla thing, it just felt like taking the foot off the gas a wee bit. And the way Ronnie Dyla's career has panned out post-Celtic sort of tells you that, you know, any speculation at the time that he was a top European coach in the making...
He's done all right, hasn't he? He's done okay, but
it's just no panned out that way at all.
No, probably not. And the thing is, I'm not against that. I'm not against the idea of trying to find, much like we do with players, trying to find who is the next up and coming coach, because the situation that Celtic are in now is that we could spend all our time going after proven names and throwing loads of money at guys like Brendan Rodgers and all that. But Ange Postecoglou was a masterstroke, really. How much of it was down to pure luck or coincidence or just connections, who knows? But it doesn't really matter. We got Ange. But we're always going for these guys who either get the club or know the city or are something of guarantees of success. But it just means that there is that other level of coach out there who are... The next guy's coming through with the next sort of innovations and ideas, but by the time we don't take a punt on them, they've gone somewhere else and we can't afford them anymore. So we might necessarily never get that kind of up and coming level of European coach. So I'm not saying that Celtic need to do that. What I'm saying is I'm not against that idea in principle. That actually sounds quite appealing, but it's very hard to get right, as Celtic proved there, because they went for Ronnie Dyla. Again, it wasn't the first choice, but they went for Ronnie Dyla and had him for 2 years. And it wasn't really great. Won the league, yes, but it wasn't. I think it was maybe the right idea, possibly wrong guy.
I was just never convinced, really, by Ronnie Dyle as Celtic manager.
I liked the way he spoke and all that, but it just didn't have that the demeanour that he felt like he was a manager or a head coach. Maybe he's got that a bit now, but it never really felt to me when he left that, you know what, we'll rue the day he left. It was just one of them. And I think it's kind of the same as players as well. Like, it's unusual that you go out and appoint a manager for Celtic and nobody's heard of him. Like, nobody, I don't know MD that's claimed, oh, do you know what? I kept an eye on Norwegian football, and that's where there's levels to these managers. Like, Ange Postecoglou was different because he'd been at Australia and he'd went out and he'd won things places, but Ronnie Dyle had success at Stromgatstedt. It's not as if there was other teams sniffing about him going, do you know what, he's going to be the next. I think there was tiers above him that were better. Celtic tried something that didn't work out, but again, with Ronnie Dyla, it was a kind of difficult one for him coming in after Neil Lennon, where the players had a lot of leeway there, and I think he should have been a bit stronger. But also, Celtic, it just shows you, like, you can't just go out and get this up-and-coming manager and plug him into Celtic strategy, because it doesn't work. We were getting this manager in saying, oh, he develops players, he's good with young players, and then bringing in inferior young players that we wouldn't have even thought about getting 2 years later when we get Brendan Rodgers in. So Celtic's strategy behind it all was so flawed for me. Do I think for a second that Ronnie Dyla wanted Colm Kazim Richards and Carlton Cole? No, I don't. So why are we getting these players? Why was there such a turnover of players? Why did we loan in about six players in his first transfer window? Why were we playing games at Murrayfield and people are screaming at Peter Lawwell to spend money? And
was it another Commonwealth Games? Is that not my...
Yeah, but I don't mean it at that. There was a reason we were there, but it was just another pre-season where we were screaming at the board, why are you not spending money? And those transfer window was poor, but those qualifiers were absolutely brutal. Yeah.
That's what I mean by about taking the foot off the gas. You know, at the time there was like an enthusiasm from some quarters about Ronnie Dyle, and even, you know, any time a new manager comes in, you're slightly enthusiastic about it, but there just was this, I don't know, underlying feeling that you just couldn't shake, could you, Stephen, that it was just a bit of the cheap option. Rangers are out of the league. We'll get the cheap guy and see how it pans out.
Is that the best time for it, though?
Yeah.
Presenting a different angle on it, playing dick advocate, as we like to do on here. If you're going to take a chance like that, is that not the perfect opportunity to go about it?
It's a lot of money to piss away with a Champions League butt in it.
It is, but much like any sort of business, do you cut your cloth accordingly? When Rangers go bust, by the way. When Rangers go bust. Yeah, when they died and went out of the league, do you go out and bring in Brendan Rodgers? I know, like, we're talking about parallel universes here because he's not available at that point, but do you go out and get someone on $2.5 million a year to come and manage Celtic against Aberdeen and all that? Do you not adjust accordingly?
Yeah, possibly, but the amount of money we frittered away on poor players and if you're having those sort of tiers of Brendan Rodgers when he came in was probably as high as Celtic could attract, how far down do you go till you get to Ronnie Dyla? Because he wasn't Neil Lennon, was he? He wasn't Gordon Strachan, Martin O'Neill, Tony Mowbray even. He was below. In fact, he's the lowest ranked manager in my lifetime that Celtic have appointed. So is there not somebody in between that could have done it better?
Yeah, I think so. But again, as I say, I don't want to shut off those possibilities to Celtic. Again, Ron, I agree with everything that's been said about Ronnie Dyle. I don't think it worked out. I wasn't really enamoured with the style of play or the players that were there at that point either. But I just feel like it's kind of like possibly an unrealistic romantic notion that I have. It's like someone one day, I feel like coaches are getting younger as well. Yeah. So you will get head coaches who are 40 and under now, instead of like people doing what Aberdeen did and appointing a 75-year-old and just he'll put a rocket up them. Up and coming coaches are getting younger and younger now. One day someone will be the new Jurgen Klopp. Who are these guys? You know, who are these guys, and can Celtic get them before they go, before they're on 10 million a year at some club? Again, it might just be a daft thought, but I'd like for Celtic to be in there.
But I think the whole thing for me is Celtic can go and get Enzo Maresca or Brendan Rodgers, whoever it is, doesn't matter if you've not got a structure, does it? Doesn't matter no. who your manager exactly. is if you are bringing in crap players for him to play with.
We had them on the podcast.
Yes, yeah, right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's still out there if you want to check out that podcast on the free feed. I tried to listen to myself today. Just search TMT meets Ronnie Dyler. You can listen to me chat to Ronnie Dyler about his time at Celtic. But that's us for this week. We are back next week with the flagship. Hit subscribe if you want to help us out on the YouTube channel. Leave a review if you're listening to us on iTunes. That would be smashing. I've not asked people to do that for a long time. But most importantly, support us on Patreon. I forgot to mention that. Patreon.com/20MinuteTims. Thank you for watching and listening.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.